You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm gonna get him!
Hey, welcome to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. We broadcast live every weeknight. That's Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. That's our flagship network, the Global Star Radio Network. We're also simulcast on BTR, Blog Talk Radio. And you can watch us live and by archive on our YouTube channel, folks. Just go to HagmanandHagman.com, click on the venue of your choice. There you'll see our official YouTube channel. There you can watch us live and in living color. Don't forget, we've got two different websites. One for the show, and that's HagmanandHagman.com. And then we have a second website for news, information, analysis, show prep. That's HagmanReport.com. Bookmark both, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Doug Hagman at the helm. Joe Hagman, my son. Something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. Now, we've got a great show for you lined up. We've got a favorite of the show, a man. I'm going to tell you. John Moore. He first fought terrorism back in 1967. He's still fighting it today. You know, he's a Vietnam vet. He walked patrol in Vietnam at night alone, searching for terrorist booby traps. Folks, go to thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com to take a look at his bio. Because here's a guy. He's a veteran detective as well. Here is a guy that has walked the walk, doesn't just talk the talk. He has lived through many things. Very important. Good friend of the program, a man I respect, for a number of reasons, including his investigative prowess, and that's John Moore. Before we bring him on, Joe, I kick it to you.
Yeah, it's great to be here tonight. We got a great week lined up for you guys. We have John Moore with us now for hour one. Afterwards, we're going to hit news and current events. Tomorrow, Bob Ulrich and Gary Stearman of Prophecy Watchers will be joining us. Wednesday, we have open phone lines scheduled. And Thursday, Paul McGuire will be our guest. And we're lining up something potentially for Friday that will be very interesting. Just got to get in touch with the proper people, and we'll be all set to go.
Indeed.
But tonight, the Liberty Man, John Moore, folks, you can go to one of his many websites. He has thelibertyman.com.
That's right, thelibertyman.com. Don't forget the in there.
TheJohnMooreShow.com, where you can go and listen to his live and archived radio shows, which he does a fantastic job of on the radio. Love listening to his podcast. And I would urge everybody to bookmark that site, The John Moore Show, to hear more from John Moore.
And before, real quick, before just one matter of housekeeping, folks, welcome to our newly revamped studio area, broadcasting area. We also have the new camera that, new to us camera, that's in use as well. So the, which will be up tomorrow.
It's okay. Up, but it's not in working order.
So, yeah, and again, you built this. You built this. Thank you for all of your assistance. If you like what we're doing, and you've helped us, I just want to say thank you so very much.
And I want to say,
we're always trying to improve.
Our second live in-studio guest will be Coach Dave
Dobmeier
on July 8th. Don't miss that.
Yeah. Yeah, if we can, unless we can sneak somebody in here before that, which I don't know. I was gonna grab Todd from Global Star. Drop my pen. Here, find your friend. So, anyway.
All right,
let's bring John on.
Yeah, let's, Mr. Moore, it's great to have you back on the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Doug. Good to be here. Well, before the show started, Doug and I were talking briefly about what we would talk about this evening. And maybe it's best to start with this matter of bugs, because it may get people's attention. Here's my two personal stories. Well, first of all, before we get into my stories, the world as we know it, we may not like bugs or appreciate them, but the world we occupy, the world we live in, cannot function, and in fact will not function, without bugs. And that's, I think, a scientifically accurate fact. With that as a baseline, August, it was actually Labor Day weekend, 2010, gentlemen, I drove the state of New York west to east on the east to west on the interstate highway at night at 70 miles an hour. About 10 o'clock at night, I stopped to get fuel, and I noticed the windshield had maybe five or six bugs on it. And I looked up at the bright white lights at the service station, and I could count the bugs. There were so few of them. And that's traveling the interstate highway at night on a warm summer evening, the Labor Day weekend, 2010. Last summer, I was in Sanibel, Florida, central Florida, and once again, I traveled north on interstate at night at 70 miles an hour, stopped to get fuel 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and the same thing. I noticed five or six bugs on the windshield, and I could count the bugs at the bright white lights at the service station. So when I got back after that trip, I spoke to a woman who's connected to the various lettered agencies, particularly FEMA and some other preparedness groups with the U.S. government. And I asked her what was going on. She says, John, within 100 miles of the Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean, and the Gulf of Mexico, there's almost no bugs left, almost none. That explains, John, why you could drive on the interstate highway at night at 70 miles an hour on a warm summer evening and have almost no bugs on your windshield in New York State and in Florida. When I found that out, the confirmation I got, I found it to be very disturbing. And also, gentlemen, I'm not aware of any mainstream attention to something as important as this. It's incredibly important compared to all the silliness that mainstream media pays attention to. This is something of huge significance, and nobody's talking about it in mainstream media that I'm aware of. Are you, Doug?
No.
Not at all.
And like the ecosystem of the ocean, you have, you know, the plankton. Each specific species plays a role in the ecosystem, in the continuation of that ecosystem. And the same goes for here on land.
But Joe, I mean,
we've
Joe.
We've been hearing for the last few years that bees have been disappearing, you know.
The bees have made the news.
Yes.
Right. The bees have made the news, and the bees that are left are in the Midwest. So they're breeding new colonies in the Midwest and exporting them to the East Coast, West Coast, and Gulf Coast where they need them. But the bees are the only part of this story that's actually made mainstream media.
Well, I got to say this. You know, what you are saying is true. About 2 weeks ago on a Saturday, very hot, steamy, muggy Saturday night, I had to go to a wedding. And this is in around Cleveland, Ohio. So it was an hour and a half drive for me, roughly. And I did notice And in fact, I remarked to my wife, but I blew it off right away. I said, you know what? No bugs hit the windshield
right.
when they should have.
Right. Right.
But I you know what, John, though? I didn't give it a second thought.
Well, it's one of those things that I mean, what can I say? I did give it thought, and it very dramatically alarmed me. I had three traveling companions, a lady and two gentlemen, and they listened to me patiently, but I don't know what they thought about it one way or the other. But I found it then, 6 years ago, very disturbing, and last summer very disturbing, that this is what's happened. Florida, especially, you know, where the alligators are, people used to spray PAM, the anti-stick frying pan spray, on the front of their cars.
Yep.
So they cleaned the bugs off. That's how bad it used to be in Florida. Well, it's not anymore.
Okay.
Let's do a segue here.
Okay, go
ahead. Let's do a segue. This may or may not play a role in it. There's a free download on my website, gentlemen. It's a 20-21 page paper paid for with your tax dollars, Department of Defense. It has a very catchy title, An Abrupt Climate Change Scenario and Its Implications for United States National Security. The two authors interviewed economists, oceanographers, agricultural experts, political experts, military people, before they wrote their findings. And the paper was based on two possible future scenarios. This was published in 2003, by the way, 13 years ago. The first possible future scenario that had not yet happened was the Gulf Stream slowing down dramatically. The second possible future scenario was the Gulf Stream stopping entirely. Now, there's also, on my website, two interviews with a PhD scientist, myself, Dr. Deagle, and our friend Ann Morrison, another scientist. We interviewed Dr. Zangari on Genesis Communications in July of 2010. Dr. Zangari is a PhD scientist living and working in Italy with other PhD scientists in Europe and North America, working on one thing and one thing only, that's the Gulf Stream. Now, the Gulf Stream was given its name by Benjamin Franklin. The scientists call it the North Atlantic Thermohaline Conveyor. And Dr. Zangari revealed something on that show I was not aware of, and that's the fact that the Gulf Stream used to, past tense, regulate the jet stream. Now, Doug and Joe, 5 miles above your head and all our listeners, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 5 miles up, is 100 to 200 mile an hour wind called the jet stream. The jet stream is largely responsible for the weather we get. There's three jet streams, northern hemisphere, equatorial, and southern hemisphere. So the jet stream being regulated by the Gulf Stream was critical for men and women involved in agriculture to have dependable weather patterns that they could build a life on, build a business model on, because of the dependability of temperatures and precipitation. And that reliability, that dependability is gone, gentlemen. It's absolutely gone. The people involved in agriculture know this. In my presentations I do around the country, whenever I have grain farmers, especially in the audience, they nod their heads in agreement because they know that the dependability of weather is simply out the window. They have nothing left to depend on. They still run their business if they have, especially, their land paid for, equipment paid for, and have enough cash to buy seed, fertilizer, herbicides, pesticides. Because if they don't and have to borrow money, they're putting themselves at great risk. So the farmers that are cash independent are a lot better off. The ones that aren't are simply going under because of these dramatic wild swings in the weather, which we're seeing on a daily basis, it seems like.
Are you, John, and forgive me, and I mean these questions without any, are you an are you saying that global warming, are you on Al Gore's global warming thing? Do you believe that that's true, or is this something different?
Well, Al Gore's documentary won the Academy Award for Best Documentary that particular year. There is science in there, and there's science fiction in there. The science is what will happen in the future, which is violently rising ocean levels and violent climate change. The science fiction is that it's involves SUV emissions and cow flatulence.
Okay.
I'm sure only the Brits would hook up a plastic bag with a tube stuck up the rear end of a cow to measure their flatulence, but they did do that.
That was Joe's job, by the way. Sorry.
But they did. But no, it's a distraction. It's a cover story. And those of us in the investigative business, we know about cover stories. It, the Al Gore human-caused climate change is a cover story. Basically, 99.5% of the people either believe, about half of them believe Al Gore's cover story of human activity. The other half believe that it's a natural, slow-moving phenomenon we can't do anything about. Less than one-half of 1% of the adults in this country, including many Navy veterans, by the way, because I've located and debriefed so many of them, know the real deal, the real story. You know, the two skills I've developed, Doug, and I know you have these skills as well, are locating witnesses and taking statements. I've developed those skills to a pretty high level.
Yep.
And in the case of the Navy veterans, I'm very blessed, since I teach concealed carry training here in the Ozarks, I've been able to locate and debrief about two dozen Navy veterans, the majority of them submarine veterans, who moved to the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks because of classified briefings they attended while in the U.S. Navy Submarine Corps. And they were told, gentlemen, during your lifetimes, these oceans will come out of their basins, flooding all coastal areas worldwide, and you just might want to, when you retire, move to the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks as one of the known safe havens, which thousands and thousands of these men have done. Now, Doug and Joe, you probably heard of the Prophecy Club with Stan Johnson out of Topeka, Kansas?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he sent me on two nationwide tours in 1 year. He'd never done that before or since with another speaker. One of them had to do with this topic. So I'm in Detroit, and it's a three-hour presentation, two 15-minute breaks. And one of the breaks, a gentleman walks up, shakes my hand, and he says, John, I'm in the insurance industry. We've wondered for years, why in the world is there such a cluster of retired Navy people in the zip codes of the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks? He said, now we know. One of these veterans, gentlemen, has agreed to go public because he was injured twice on Navy submarines, broke his back on one injury, and was exposed to ionizing radiation, almost killed him on another submarine. And so he has 100% disability that cannot be taken away from him. These other Navy veterans are not about to risk their pension by revealing classified information. That's simply not going to happen. I did, however, have three veterans privately help me recreate the map that was shown in these briefings, beginning in 1979, by the way, and it's on my DVD for sale at my website, thelibertyman.com. The map showing North America with new coastlines. Yeah, North America with new coastlines. So Tim Spencer went public, and he's on that DVD also giving his testimony. And it's kind of funny. He and his wife, Lori, were at one of my pistol classes, and we're having lunch together not far from where I'm sitting. And he and his wife are both from Central Florida. They're both Native Americans, by the way. In fact, Tim Spencer didn't know until he was in the Navy you couldn't make all the whiskey you wanted to. we're sitting there having lunch, and his wife, Lori, says, she says, John, I don't like cold weather. I don't like snow. I don't even like Missouri. But I'm here because of that darn map. And she tapped on the table, that darn map. And that's a map, of course, on my DVD. The government has been aware of these things for many, many decades. Beginning in around 1979 is when they confirmed where the 10th planet is, its orbit, its mass, its velocity, and that's when they began the classified briefings. I traced these briefings back to a Saturday morning briefing in New Orleans for flag rank officers. One of my listeners, we call him Phil from Montana, he was setting up the room, the tables, chairs, lights, and sound system. He saw the map, but he was not allowed in the briefing room. So he went from 1979 until 2009 when he saw my DVD, not knowing what that map meant. So he calls me up after seeing the DVD, and he says, John, I saw your map, and he told me the whole story about the Navy Admiral showing up for a Saturday morning briefing. He says, John, Admirals don't do Saturday morning briefings. They went into the room. They were all laughing, slapping each other on the back, smoking cigars, telling jokes, inquiring about each other's families and wives. He said when they came out of the briefing room, which was guarded, by the way, by an officer, not an NCO, which typically a classified briefing would be, have the room guarded by an NCO. They all looked like their puppy dogs had died. They'd gotten just one of the very first briefings about what would be coming in the future. So mainstream media has briefly mentioned the Gulf Stream slowing down. They have not quite, are not quite ready to admit that it stopped in June 2010, because too many people would understand what that meant. Too many people would figure it out. And what they're not concerned about, gentlemen, is panic. What they're concerned about is the independent business owners in this country figuring it out, waking up Monday morning and saying to their spouse, honey, I think we'll just lock up the business and call it a day and move to the Ozarks. That's what they're fearful of, because that would cause a collapse of the economy. So Al Gore has done a very effective job in distraction and creating the cover story. Mainstream media has played their role in blaming the bizarre weather on La Nina or El Nino, which are temporary events that correct themselves. And for the most part, most of the population is in the dark as to what's coming and why. And they were, most of them, 95-96% will remain so until it's too late to do anything.
Man, that is a mouthful. And certainly that's something that we, well...
Well, it's easy to prove, and there's scientific evidence that the Gulf Stream stopped. At my website, the U.S. Navy, by the way, which is not exactly a conspiracy theory, United States Navy publishes a brand new map every 24 hours showing ocean surface temperatures worldwide. And you can, there's a link on my website to click on that. If you do, there'll be a warning, government warning, warning, don't go here, your computer's going to explode. Just ignore that. That's a typical government warning. So you can go to the map for any given date, such as today, June 27th, 2016. We also have a screen capture made before June of 2010, showing the Gulf Stream going all the way across the North Atlantic to the British Isles, where it splits, some going north towards Scandinavia, the rest going south towards the French coast. And, of course, the daily updates that are put on there now show the Gulf Stream going east by northeast from about Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. It goes out several hundred miles to the North Atlantic. It does a loop-de-loop and peters out and stops, and that's the end of it. That's, as I say, as I told you privately, Doug, the second most important story in 2,000 years because of the dramatic adverse impact on the Northern Hemisphere. Now, let's translate that into the daily news. The Syrian refugees. You hear about Syrian refugees pretty much every day, and we should. All you hear is they're escaping war. What you don't hear is that part of the world, not just Syria, but surrounding areas, are having the worst drought in 900 years. So their agricultural part of their economy has absolutely collapsed, and almost any country, Iceland might be an exception, almost any country, when the agricultural part of the economy collapses, so does everything else. So that's a massive reason why these people are leaving Syria, is because of the 900-year drought that's taking place as we speak in Syria right now.
So this was planned very deliberately and diabolically, but it, not for humanitarian reasons.
I have no evidence of that, of the drought being man-made.
No. I shouldn't say planned. In terms of the refugees, quote refugees, or the resettlement of these people, it's being
well,
done.
Well, they're taking
not
advantage
for...
of it. There's other agendas here. Okay. There's multiple layers of agendas.
Okay.
It was about 300 years ago that the Muslim army was defeated by the Christian army at Vienna on September the 11th.
Right.
You know, they never did get over it. They never did
Gates
get over
Vienna.
It.
Gates of Vienna. Yep. You're right.
Absolutely. But letting these Muslims into Europe is they're destroying their countries. They're destroying themselves. And it's a travesty. And it's treason is what's taking place in both Europe and the United States, allowing these even the FBI is saying we can't possibly vet these people coming in. You know, as you and Doug, you and Joe know, here in the States we have a very organized system of more than 3,000 counties, more than 3,000 courthouses, and we can check up on pretty much anybody by using those courthouse records. That system does not exist in the Middle East. Whatever records they did have have pretty much been destroyed in the ongoing, never-ending wars over there. There's no way to tell who these people are, and the FBI has admitted it publicly.
Yeah, and John Moore is right. In fact, folks, our guest tonight, this hour, John Moore, his website, thelibertyman.com. And I would urge everyone to go to thelibertyman.com and download, on the right-hand side there, you'll see abrupt climate change scenario and its implications for U.S. national security. Download that PDF. 22 pages. Published in 03. This is what John Moore is talking about right now. And folks, by the way, John is the real deal. In fact, I just saw somebody say, boy, he is the real Magnum PI. And he is. I mean, look at his bio. I'm not going to spend much time here except to say that he's a speaker. He's an investigative trainer since he's been that since 1986. He's flown over 57 combat missions, and he's a decorated Vietnam veteran. He's been a homicide detective in the state of Missouri for 8 years, and well, since 1973. And this is a guy that I can certainly relate to and talk with.
Well, we relate to each other because we've both been there, done that, got the T-shirt. You know, when you're writing in your book, Doug, about surveillance, a whole flood of thoughts came back to me about things I've done over the years and hadn't thought about in such a long time.
The discomfort associated with the cramped quarters, long hours, bad coffee, and other
things. I always had good coffee. No, I always had good coffee. I brought my own. I didn't get that quick shop stuff. I only had a good thermos of good coffee. People come into the unless they're a former police officer, they come in as rookies with totally different expectations as to what the career actually involves. And it's work. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It is work, and you earn every penny.
Yeah. Well, this is really interesting because we're getting reports now since you're on, hey, I live in Southern California. No bugs, man. What's going on? You're right. Hey, I've noticed the lack of mosquitoes, this being in this one from Western New York. So what you're saying is interesting.
It's interesting, but this is not a flippant statement. It's not a flippant statement to say the following. The world that we occupy, the world that supports us and keeps us alive, cannot and will not function without bugs.
Right.
I mean, that's a true statement, not a flippant statement. And it's you know, we know about the bees. The bees have raised some alarms for a number of years, and they should, because they're so critical to the pollination of the food that we eat. But the rest of these bugs are just as important for multiple other reasons. And there's no mainstream attention to it at all. I'm sure there's been discussions at the very highest levels about what's going on, because the scientists who work for the government, they know how important this is. As I frequently say, Doug, I'm no scientist. You know, when it came to science in high school, I was on the football field. I wasn't paying attention in science class. But I'm a homicide detective. I'm no scientist. But I do know that bugs are not optional. They simply are not optional. They're a critical, non-optional part of the world we live in, and the world we live in cannot and will not function in the normal sense without bugs.
Right. And essentially we're seeing this, the bugs are dying off
Well, they're gone. I can't tell you the reason why, and that's where the wild speculation begins, as it did with the bees. Oh, it's cell phone towers. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that. Well, regardless of why, they're gone.
Okay.
And it's a fairly recent phenomenon. I first became aware of it, like I said, 6 years ago. The herbicides and pesticides have been around for many, many decades. So I don't know what to attribute it to, and I'm not sure that it matters.
Right.
If that locomotive is coming at you at 80 miles an hour, does it matter if it's green or blue? I mean, really. It doesn't matter. It's a fact. It's a provable scientific fact that the bugs are gone. It's a provable scientific fact that the Gulf Stream stopped June 12, 2010. Now, in July of 2010, the month following, two interesting things happened in the next 6 months in Moscow. Moscow has weather records, gentlemen, going back 1,000 years. There aren't many places that have that, but Moscow does. The hottest July in 1,000 years in 2010, and then the coldest winter of 2010-2011 in Moscow also. The coldest winter in 1,000 years. We had pipes freezing, and I'm sure they still are, underground in Ireland and Scotland because the frost line had gotten deeper. And, of course, we all know the bizarre, freakish weather we've had here in North America the past 6 years. We're at a point now where if a place gets 12 inches of rain in one day, it hardly makes the news. It's become so common. They have to get a foot and a half or 2 feet of rain in one day now to make the news.
Right. And we just saw an entire town like that in West Virginia, 24-plus people dead. Due to flash flooding, the worst in 500 years.
Right. Well, they don't know what happened 500 years ago. That's just a guess more than anything. But having 500 and 1,000-year floods every 2 or 3 years has become the norm. And this will continue.
Oh, man.
This will continue. We had a hurricane. I'm in South Central Missouri. Now, 6 years ago, we had a hurricane down here over land. And even the local radio station was calling it a hurricane. That, according to traditional meteorology, that can happen. But I have a good follow-up story on that. A friend of mine, Ann Morrison, she's on with me every Friday. She's a scientist and an engineer. She was in a class for Skywarn just a few weeks after Hurricane Katrina. Now, Skywarn is a nationwide program. They take civilians and train them to accurately observe weather and report back to the county sheriff or whatever official they report back to their observations. So she's in this class in St. Louis County, and there's a young meteorologist, a NOAA meteorologist, is the instructor. So they're on a breakout in the hallway, and Hurricane Katrina just happened 6 or 8 weeks before, and the young scientist about it, young enough to be her son, he says the following: just wait until you start seeing these hurricanes forming over land. Well, Ann Morrison attempted to ask a follow-up question. The young scientist quickly understood that if he said any more, his career and his pension would be toast, so he did not. But under traditional meteorology, gentlemen, hurricanes cannot form over land. But now, in fact, we are seeing that happen. The impossible, it has become the possible. That's what's going on right now, gentlemen.
Well, where do we see it going from here? I mean, if it's so bad now, I mean, is it going to get to the point where, you know, we're just going to be living in a world with devastating natural disasters on a daily, weekly, monthly basis?
Well, it's not too far from being accurate to say we're pretty much there already. I recall, you know, 30, 40 years ago that serious weather events were not weekly news or even hardly monthly news. Maybe several times a year they would be mainstream news, you know, international news, but they have become pretty much weekly, if not monthly, very, very serious weather-related events have been happening on a frequency that we never saw 30, 40 years ago. Would you agree with that, Doug?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. No argument at all.
I refer to that paper, An Abrupt Climate Change Scenario, is the scariest 21, 22 pages of nonfiction you'll ever read. Now, when I read it, the Gulf Stream had not yet stopped. It didn't stop for another 6 years. Reading it after it stopped, it changed my whole perspective, knowing that now that possible future scenario had, in fact, become reality. And in the paper, they say that after the Gulf Stream stopped, here's what will happen. Mass migrations of millions of people. That's happening right now. Bizarre weather-related events. Flooding of coastal areas. All the things that they talk about. Well, they talk about war and famine and economic disaster as well. All those things are either in the process of happening or I'm pretty sure will happen in a not-too-distant future, given the circumstances that we're seeing, the millions of refugees, the economic displacement, and so forth. So reading that paper is critical, I think, for all your listeners. Of course, I have a radio show Monday through Friday myself, gentlemen, 8 to 10 Central Time a.m., and we have guests that talk about these matters and related matters. And, of course, preparedness is one of my mantras also. One of the things I witnessed firsthand during the Tet Offensive was thousands of people having their homes destroyed overnight, living in parks, any public area they could, with no shelter, no restroom facilities, and so forth. And it's seeing human tragedy firsthand, at least in my case, changed me forever. And I'll do anything I can to mitigate and help people not have to end up in that situation. So I spend a lot of time encouraging people to become prepared, have their food, have their water, have their safe haven, and hopefully be part of a hobby farm. A hobby farm is a place where the produce grown is meant for consumption on a premises as opposed to the sale to make a livelihood. A hobby farm is a great place to raise a family and a great place to have a safe haven. And I encourage people to at least consider becoming part of one somehow, some way.
Inland, however.
At a good altitude, away from population center. Preferably west of the Mississippi River. All you folks east of Mississippi, your population density pretty much doubles once you're west, east of the Mississippi River. You may think The Appalachian Mountains are remote and unpopulated, but you're not too far away from tens of millions of people.
Well, John, what would this do to the Great Lakes as well as the Mississippi River?
The U.S. Navy scientists say that Lake Michigan will empty out into the Mississippi River Valley. The Mississippi River Valley will become an inland sea, 100 to 200 miles wide, 100 to 200 feet deep, essentially splitting the country in two, east-west, at the Mississippi River. A friend of mine, he was at a briefing at United States Northern Command about 5 or 6 years ago, where they talked about how they were going to commence splitting United States Northern Command east-west at the Mississippi River, all the personnel, all the equipment, all supplies, all command and control. And they didn't say why, they just said they would do it. And I'd already briefed my friend about what the Navy was telling their veterans, and he was just sitting there smiling to himself because he knew why they were splitting U.S. Northcom east-west at the Mississippi River. Of course, you can do it now. Things are relatively easy. We've got about 20, 25 bridges across the Mississippi River. You don't have bridges across an inland sea 100 miles wide. So transportation would become much more difficult under those conditions.
Understood. Okay, yeah, obviously. Is this something that would happen... I know it would happen quickly, but are we talking like an overnight? Because you had made reference to
when it kicks in, and there's some speculation, and that's a great question, Doug. Some speculation about the time frame. Of course, for all people want to know when's it going to happen. I kind of flippantly say 3 p.m. tomorrow. But once these events kick in, it's going to be about 30 days for what's commonly referred to as a pole shift, where you know the two North Poles, Doug and Joe?
Yeah.
Okay. Magnetic North and True North.
Yep.
And what happened, and there's undisputable scientific evidence that magnetic North moves in a certain direction for many, many centuries, about 36 actually. And then True North catches up with it basically in about 3 days when that pole shift happens. Typical pole shift is about 12 to 15 degrees. Now, that may not sound like much, but when you got something 24,000 miles in diameter, it's a lot, 12 to 15 degrees. And there's a bulge of water at the equator, not quite 500 feet above Cornwall, England, where they measure sea level. That bulge of water held in place by gravity and the rotation of the Earth. And that's, we're talking tens of thousands of cubic miles of water. Once that's displaced, that's where all the flooding's going to come from on all coastal areas worldwide. Some obviously more than others. The Navy estimates about 400 feet for most of North America. The slush, there'll be two parts. It's the slush where it temporarily goes up to a higher level, and then when it settles down to the new sea level, there are two parts of it. And people need to be prepared for the slush, which will kill you just as quickly as anything else. And it's happened before.
The slosh, just to be clear, the slosh would be, to create a mental picture, like sitting in a bathtub, right, and rocking in the water.
Well, you're walking across a floor with a punch bowl that's full of punch to the top, and you stop. The punch doesn't.
gotcha. All right.
Yeah, slosh. Okay. Technical term. what else are you going to call it? A friend of mine, Doug and Joe, he was on a vacation out west. He climbed to the top of one of these mesas, you know, these big, really huge, flat-top rocks that stick up hundreds of feet above the desert floor. And he says, he gets back and he says, John, there were seashells all over the top of that darn thing. And you know, they weren't the fossils of seashells, they were the seashells. But the map is very disturbing because the map shows where 80-90% of the American people live will be underwater. And that's why the Navy veterans, when they retire, are moving to the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks. Thousands and thousands of Navy veterans who were at these briefings beginning in 1979, including my friend Tim Spencer, who gives his testimony on my DVD. Tim is also my webmaster, and he's on my show with me every Thursday morning. Great guy. He's been suffering from the radiation exposure, which pretty much killed his pancreas, and the broken back, which began lifelong surgeries. But he is getting better, and really been a great help for me and his family.
Well, amen for that. John, on the same subject, sort of, have you heard or been hearing anything about the New Madrid fault line?
I can tell you're not a barefoot hillbilly like me. We call it New Madrid, not New Madrid.
Okay.
A little background here. During the winter of 1811-1812, the New Madrid seismic zone released hundreds of earthquakes, not just the three we hear about, the three that rang church bells in Philadelphia. Yeah. Hundreds of earthquakes. The energy went north and south and east very efficiently and didn't go west very, very efficiently. U.S. Navy says when we have this new inland sea, which is right next and on top of the New Madrid seismic zone, that the weight of the water will trigger at least 3 9-point-plus earthquakes with that energy going east, north, and south. North towards St. Louis, Chicago, south towards Memphis and New Orleans, and east towards the east coast, causing massive damage to infrastructure. Keeping in mind also that these 20 or so inch diameter steel pipes that feed natural gas and oil from Texas to the northeast go right on top of the New Madrid seismic zone when they cross the Mississippi River. So those will all be broken and disrupted, and you don't just replace those 20 inch diameter pipes under a river overnight. That's a massive engineering undertaking there to replace those oil pipelines, oil and natural gas. So there's been a lot of activity and a lot of actually mainstream media attention just the last 3 or 4 weeks about the New Madrid seismic zone and a possible increase of slightly larger earthquakes. There's earthquakes every week on the New Madrid seismic zone. Typically they're in ones and twos, and that's just the nature of that of seismic zone. People that live near it are very, very aware, even common citizens. I was in a restaurant not far from New Madrid, Missouri. They had a full color map of the New Madrid seismic zone on the wall of the cafe. All the elected officials, first responders, police, fire, paramedics, they're all very, very aware of the threat posed by the New Madrid seismic zone to their counties and their communities. And they have a lot of regular drills to prepare for it. Missouri National Guard has designated sections of Interstate 55 as landing strips for cargo aircraft. Utilities have, and I was involved with some of this myself personally, utilities have set up alternative emergency radio communications, figuring that the telephone system will be completely down. So there's been a lot of activity, both in the private sector and the public sector, getting ready for the effects of the New Madrid seismic zone, doing what it can, and almost without a doubt will do at some point in the future, gentlemen.
Very interesting. Folks, we're talking to John Moore, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com. Go to his website and download the abrupt climate change scenario and its implications for U.S. national security, a very sobering 22-page document published in 2003. We're seeing it, and John knows.
It's playing out in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, what these two researchers, these authors, did in interviewing all these experts and all their expertise was lay out the blueprint for what's inevitable when weather changes and becomes undependable, unreliable, and you can't count on it anymore. When you grow grains, it's a five-year business cycle. One bad growing season for every four good ones. Everything these farmers do, the land they buy, the equipment they get, the seed, fertilizer, pesticide, herbicide, everything is based on that business model, being able to service that debt and make a profit. And four good harvests for every bad one harvest. That business cycle is broken, gentlemen. It is broken and will never be repaired, not for centuries, if ever. It puts everything at risk. When agriculture is at risk, everything else is at risk. We may have a lot of modern conveniences and cell phones that have all this wonderful computing power, but that doesn't change the reality of agriculture being the foundation of civilization. If your agriculture segment gets broken, everything else is broken. And that's where we are, gentlemen. That's my reality.
Yeah, we had a FEMA contractor come out and predict social unrest will be caused by a 400% increase in food prices due to agricultural shortages this year.
Right.
I hope his predictions are wrong.
What he's doing is basically reinforcing what's said in that 22-page document.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah, exactly.
I interact with FEMA, and FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Agency. SEMA is State Emergency Management Agency. I meet these people, I interact with them, and privately they'll let me know that they already know about the violent climate change, about the rising ocean levels, and their own personal private communication preparations that they're making for their families. They can't and won't talk about it publicly. It would be the end of their career, possibly worse, depending on what kind of non-disclosure agreements they signed. So that's not going to happen. These FEMA and SEMA officials will not talk publicly about any of this. They can't and they won't.
Hmm. Oh, boy. All right.
John, the team official that said what he said, now, he had authority to do that based on whatever his bosses told him. You know, these are all organizations that have a chain of command. So he's doing what his chain of command authorized him to do, talking about a 400% possible increase in food prices. Most people won't hear that, and the ones that do won't pay a whole lot of attention. So that's safe. It's a safe thing to say because people are more interested in Dancing with the Stars. They know what's important, you guys, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And the batting average of their favorite baseball player. They got your priorities straight. You know?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And sometimes I wonder, John, you know, this is something you and I have not spoken about, but I wonder how many people were reaching or not reaching, but actually making a difference when we talk.
Well,
when we have programs like this.
We reach out the ones we can, try to have no emotional attachment to the outcome, and we reach out to the remnant. We reach out to those who have not had their pineal gland screwed up by sodium fluoride and calcified, and and we do what we can, Doug.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, John, are you available for professional consultations and speaking?
I am. There's a link on my website. I am available. In fact, there's a way if people want to bring me to their community and speak. If you click on Uncle Sam there on my homepage, you can learn how to earn a commission if you give my director of marketing a referral to bring me to your community to speak.
Folks, John Moore is one guy I definitely would listen to because of his resume and he's got his fingers on the pulse of everything that's taking place today. So
I'm going to ask you a question here, Doug and
sure.
Joe both. In your opinion, could you go to a major hotel in any major city in the United States, Chicago, New York, St. Louis, Miami, San Francisco, Los Angeles, stand in front of that hotel and dress as if you were just walking out from a convention, hail a taxi cab, and be able to purchase cocaine within 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Of course you could.
Yeah.
There's no drug war. That's a fantasy. That's a fantasy.
Yep.
That's a fantasy.
That's right.
There is no drug war. Never has, never will be.
That's right. Well, yeah, and it's... wow, that we could do a whole program on that alone, but you're exactly right. Where were you headed with that? Just curious.
Oh, it's just to give people a heads up, that's all.
Got it.
You know, there's the purpose of the DEA is to prevent competition with the government. That's all that is.
You know, and that's such a good... you made such a good point with that question. Folks, if you think that we're being bamboozled on, well, we are. But I mean, think about what John just asked. And yeah,
absolutely.
That's BS, man.
John, besides your own radio show, do you have any upcoming appearances on other radio shows or?
Yeah, you want to promote anything?
Oh, well, I do in an hour. Actually, at 8:30 Central Time, hour and a half. I'm not sure it's being broadcast live. I backed off some of the live stuff because I was losing all my personal time, but I don't have anything scheduled other than that at the moment.
Okay, all right. Well, we want to keep you, everyone.
Well, Doug, I want to get you on my show soon to talk about your book, and we'll talk privately about that. Okay.
Yeah, well, in fact, we will do that. Thank you so much. God bless you, my friend. You delivered a very sobering message during this hour. And
absolutely.
Of course, people take heed. So I just want to thank you so much for your gift of
time.
Thank
you, Doug and Joe. We'll talk privately. Appreciate it.
Have a
good evening.
Indeed. All right.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Folks, that was John Moore. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. You know him. You know him. I'm sure you do. What a dynamic speaker too. If you haven't heard him speak in person, it's a lot of fun. He does provide professional consultation and keynote presentations, and he gives seminars. He's got meet and greets with his radio audience. It's pretty cool. How his model is very interesting indeed. Now, on the other side of this hour, we are going to get into some of the news. You know, Joe,
there's a lot happened over the weekend and into today. There's so much. We haven't talked really about what we're going to get into in the next few hours, but I guarantee folks you're going to want to stay tuned because we're going to cover a number of hard-hitting issues, and we're going to cover them in depth.
I mean,
it's just some of the stuff that's happened is explosive, from pastor being told he cannot advertise Jesus, the bear exit and the
or break
propaganda that's coming out of that. Yeah.
Yeah. We are seeing an acceleration of events take place like never before, folks. Stay with us right after the network news. We're going to be back hitting the news analyzing what's in front of us. Hang right there.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.